Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, just a quick note that we recorded this episode 2 weeks ago and a lot has happened since then. We didn't release the episode last week because we felt it was more important to make space for other voices while we started to do some unlearning and some protesting and figuring out ways to get more involved in the fight for racial justice. We will talk more about all of that on next week's episode. In the meantime, there is a link in our bio that's a good starting point if you need ideas for places to donate to, and there's some other helpful resources in there as well. And now here is this week's episode.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy, and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi everyone, welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared for scary movies.
That's a good way of putting it. I'm Henley, I'm also too scared for scary movies.
I am Sammy, and I love scary movies, and I love telling these two about them.
And this time, Emily's watched it too, so you're both going to tell me about it. I can't wait.
So we can both tell Henley. But before we do, what's up with us?
I have had, like everyone in the world, a lot of anxiety lately, particularly around bedtime. And the other night, I threw a little tantrum to myself that I wanted to hear a bedtime story, like an actual 5-year-old.
That's adorable.
And there's a podcast called Sleep Cove. Some free promo for you, Sleep Cove. Which is
Sleep
just
Cove, if you're listening. Free promo for you.
Sponsor us. Give us a shout out too on your sleep app.
That's honestly a good pairing. You listen to a scary movie and then you need help sleeping.
That's true.
Sleep Cove.
But it's this British man with this very soothing voice, and he reads bedtime stories, and he has three different, he does meditations and he does hypnosis and he also does bedtime stories, but I've been listening to him read Little Red Riding Hood every night before bed.
Oh my goodness.
Sammy, I'm going to do that tonight.
I highly recommend it, listeners. The app is called Sleep Cove, like I said.
One more time. It's called Sleep Cove.
You'd use code TSDW for 20% off. I can't wait. Just kidding. Don't do that. That's not a thing.
You could try.
I mean, you could try, but good luck. Good fucking luck. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, but it is soothing and it really does help me sleep. So everyone check it out. What about you guys? What's up with you?
I sort of took a little break, but why did I need to say that? Who cares? I have been watching a lot of Sopranos because I've never seen it before. And it's impossible, in my opinion, to watch the Sopranos and not want to be eating Italian food, because they're like constantly eating big plates of spaghetti and like desserts. It's just like impossible to not want to do it.
Notoriously love spaghetti anyways. So.
And I notoriously love spaghetti. I said that as if it's a joke. It's not. I'm always eating spaghetti.
Big spaghetti head.
She's a spaghetti head.
I'm a huge noodle head. So I looked up when I was watching an episode last week, best cannolis in LA, because I was like, I must have cannolis now. I must. And I found them, and it's in this little Italian bakery and deli In Eagle Rock, and it's open in the pandemic, and they have like pantry items. It's this cute little tiny shop that I'm sure has been there for ages, and they were letting people in like five at a time, and I went and I got, you guessed it, spaghetti, and I also got pizza dough and all sorts of like Italian pantry items and some sandwiches for lunch, and they were so good. They were like, they tasted like what the idea of a sandwich is. Do you know how when you just have a sandwich mm-hmm. that like, this is a sandwich, you know? It was that, and it was so good. And I did get cannolis, and they were heavenly. And yeah, pizza dough, and then made a pizza the next day. And it, it was great. I've talked for, I don't know, 45 minutes now about the food that I ate.
I want to go to this place, Emily.
Everyone should.
Do you remember the name of it?
It's literally just Eagle Rock Italian Bakery and Deli.
Oh, I think you said that, and I thought you were just using a general descriptor of what it was.
It's literally what it's called. Show up, give them code TSCW for 20%.
Checkout. Yeah, just go up to the counter and say TSDW sent you.
Hi, TSDW, 20% off. yeah, it's great. And one of the things that I got there that I had the other day, I got some spaghetti, and if you can believe it, and they are the longest spaghetti noodles I have to show you next time I make them. Like true Lady and the Tramp style noodles. Like when it is cooked, it's like a 6 foot.
It's so, oh my God, this, that's so long.
It's too long.
And that's wrong. It's not 6 feet, but it is like 3 feet. It's a long ass noodle, and it's so fun. It's so fun.
That is fun.
I can't recommend it enough. Everybody go get your cannolis, get your long ass noodles, and it's great. It's great.
I guess my thing for this week is I've been listening to two different podcasts that are,
oh my God,
more shout outs to podcasts,
more promos. Look at us.
I mean, I stick to like the same podcast normally, so this is just I have like a set of like five I rotate between, so this was just, you know, getting out of my comfort zone a little bit. But one is called Wind of Change. Have you guys heard about this? Mm-mm. About this is a fucking wild ass story about how the CIA during the fall of the Berlin Wall basically like got a rock band, like wrote a song undercover to basically change the hearts and minds of people on their feelings of communism. Like, whoa. It's like, and the CIA, I don't know what happens. I haven't listened to the end yet, so I don't know if they ever like cop to it, but it's basically like the wildest story of how influential the CIA has been.
Oh.
And it's very interesting. There are a lot of twists and turns. So highly recommend that. And then also another one I've been listening to is called Boom Bust HQ Trivia. Do you guys remember HQ Trivia?
Yeah.
Do you remember that a couple years ago?
It's
all about the rise and fall of that, of like the viral quiz sensation.
Oh, interesting. It fucking blew up.
Yeah, and then it just disappeared. And so the podcast is just like just exploring what happened to it and why it became literally at its peak. I think like 3 million people were logging in at a time to play.
Do you think it's because
HQ
it was
trivia.
Too hard?
I don't know. I haven't gotten
there
yet.
Is that a personal beef, Sammy?
Yeah, that's why I stopped.
Probably. That's probably it.
Man, that's fascinating.
Wow, so many recommendations. Our listeners are going to be busy.
You're going to be busy. You're going to be eating spaghetti. You're going to be listening to bedtime stories. You're going to be learning about the CIA and trivia.
Well, let's get into this week's movie.
Let's get into this week's
movie. Because you've got a busy week ahead.
You've got a busy week ahead. You have places to be.
But yeah, Emily and I both watched this week's movie.
We did. Sammy probably more thoroughly than me, but I did watch
I watched it harder for sure.
You watched it harder, yeah.
It is Ready or Not. Came out last year, 2019. Directed by Matt Bettinelli-Ulpin and Tyler Gillett. Written by Guy Busick and R. Christopher Murphy. starring Samara Weaving, Mark O'Brien, Adam Brody, Henry Cerny, and Andy McDowell. I had a blast watching this movie start to finish. I actually had such a good time that I stood up in my apartment and danced afterwards.
What?
Well, that's fun. Okay, see, I wish I'd had as good a time. And it's and it's not just because I don't love scary movies as much, because I will say I didn't find this movie all that scary.
Right.
There were some gruesome parts that I did not like watching, and I sort of pulled my eyes away. And there were a few moments where, as listeners may know, and Sammy and Henley certainly know, I like to get up to high ground when I'm scared during a scary movie. So there were a few moments where I perched on my couch, but I was still able to watch.
The floodwaters of fear.
I don't know what it is, but it's like it has to happen or I can't survive. It was really fun. And you know, maybe it is what we've talked about before, which and we'll get into. I loved the setup and I was disappointed by the payoff. I thought the first half of the movie was better than the second.
I disagree for once in my life. I love the ending.
Okay, I can't wait to hear your thoughts because I really liked it. I wanted to love it. And I was, and maybe the thing is I was like disappointed that it didn't 100% win me over because I was sort of expecting
I'll say that's fair. That's fair. It's not perfect.
Yeah, you got to lower those expectations. Like,
I
got.
I think it's. I so rarely will let myself watch a scary movie that I think I was like, "Ooh, this is gonna be good." So maybe I just set the bar too high.
Hi everybody, it is cocktail hour, and this week's cocktail is a millionaire's martini. To make this drink, you'll need 1 1/3 ounces of gin, 1 1/3 ounces of extra dry vermouth, and 2/3 an ounce of champagne. You'll stir the first two ingredients with ice and strain into a chilled coupe glass and top with champagne. Garnish with a lemon zest twist. So fancy. Cheers. Let's do some trivia.
Because there is some fun trivia for this one, I think.
One cool thing is that the director, well, like a lot of the team behind this movie are currently working on Scream 5.
Oh, that's fun. That's really fun. One thing that I just think is funny. So it's set in this like big mansion, this like creepy, spooky mansion, wealthy family's home with like a lot of candelabras and stuff. And apparently they only had five. Like the set, they only had five. And so they kept having to move them from room to room when they would shoot in different rooms, which is just like, just get more. Like, just get more. I don't know.
A really limited candelabra budget.
Was it a lower budget movie? It looks.
The budget is $6 million.
Okay. That's pretty low budget. That's pretty low budget, I'd say.
It's pretty relatively low, and it made $58
million. All right.
It really reminded me when it was getting started. And you know what? Maybe this is another reason why I was slightly.
I know what you're going to say of Knives Out.
Do you? What?
Knives Out?
Yep. It reminded me a lot of Knives Out. And I fucking loved Knives Out. So I think I was like, ooh, okay, we're doing Knives Out. Which, that's obviously, Knives Out is not a horror.
But it's kind of like a mystery family, rich family.
Mystery family. There it's like funny, it's like and sort of like cheeky at times. Mm-hmm. And what's the word, like haunted, like spooky in a haunted mansion ride type way,
right?
But a horror. But I didn't love it as much as I love Knives Out. Yeah. I guess is like my thing.
Yeah, I wrote down that it reminded me of Knives Out mixed with Hot Fuzz, mixed with Your Next, mixed with Kingsman.
Wow, that's a lot of things, and also I think that that's right. And this is I guess kind of an actor's rights trivia that I don't love is that during rehearsals, Adam Brody accidentally stabbed a producer with a prop knife because they weren't even shooting or rehearsing a scene. He just was playing with it and he thought it was retractable and it's not. And he stabbed a producer.
Oh, my God.
In the shoulder. Fortunately, it's not the worst place to get stabbed. And he was fine. He got stitches and came back to set. But like, Adam, you've been an actor your whole life. Check the knife. Check it. It's very easy to check if a knife is retractable or not. Very easy. And don't do it on a person.
Yeah, we shouldn't be making that mistake
Yeah, I did a shot a thing once where we used prop guns, and they were fully prop guns, like replica guns had never been made to shoot ever, but like looked and felt like guns. And literally every time I was given it, I opened the chamber to check for bullets. I'm also a freak, but like opened the chamber to check for bullets, shot it at the ground. Like I was like, somebody could have replaced it with a real gun, and I have to know, and I have to know.
Yeah, you want to be
like,
safe.
It's not like, just check.
Better safe than sorry.
Just check so you don't stab someone.
One thing that I didn't know is that Samara Weaving is Hugo Weaving's niece. Hugo Weaving is Agent Smith from The Matrix, my favorite movie of all time.
I also didn't know he was Australian. Does that mean he's Australian?
He's actually not. He's British, but he lives in Australia. So I guess their family must have moved to Australia later in life, perhaps? Yes,
people have family members in other countries.
That is also true. And then a personal trivia is that I once was an assistant editor for the editor of this movie, which was kind of fun. I saw his name pop up, Terrell Gibson, and I've worked with him, so I got excited.
That's cool.
Yeah, pretty fun. Hi, Terrell.
Hi, Terrell.
Hi, Terrell. I'm sure you're listening, and hi.
We love your work.
Yeah, he's great. He also edited Sorry to Bother You, another great one.
Oh, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. All in all, I'm glad I watched this movie, even though it wasn't, we won't talk about it, wasn't all that scary. I would not have been able to watch this a year ago.
I
also wouldn't have wanted to.
I feel like exposure therapy is real. I feel like even me, who I like scary movies, I've felt my tolerance also increase, and I just enjoy them more and more each time. And I think that's true. And we're all slowly getting desensitized together.
I'm excited about that.
Except for me.
I think you kind of are still also, Henley, but just slower.
I haven't been putting in as much of an effort, you know? I haven't actually been watching the movies.
We can't all be brave. Then the name of the podcast doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, it does. That's
true.
That's a really good point.
Should we watch the trailer?
Yeah, let's watch the trailer.
I can't believe that in half an hour, I will be a part of the Ladomus Gaming Dynasty Empire.
Dominion, we prefer Dominion.
I honestly can't wait to be a part of your family.
There's just one more thing, and then you are officially part of the family. So, at midnight, you have to play a game.
Why?
It's just something we do when someone new joins the family.
A game. What game? Hide and seek? Are we really gonna play that?
Well, the rules are simple. You can hide anywhere. We then try to find you.
So there's no way for me to win, right?
I mean, stay hidden till dawn.
No, thank you.
Good luck.
I know you're in here.
Jesus, you shot the maid.
Does she look like she's wearing a giant white wedding dress? Emily?
Holy shit!
I had to play along so that I can get you out.
It's insane.
They think they have to kill you before sunrise. Or something very bad will happen to the family.
If we don't find her and perform the ritual, we're all dead.
Found her.
God damn it! Emily!
I don't know what I'm doing!
Today's video is called Getting to Know Your Crossbow.
I forgot my gun.
Why don't you just use mine?
Mr. Ladomus, I just saw her running.
Oh my god!
Oh, your fucking family!
You're just another sacrifice.
Do you think this is a fucking game?
Yes, hide and seek. Remember?
You guys, I am excited though. This trailer, it made me excited to hear about it for sure. It's
like
definitely
it literally
is
the Knives
Out
font.
Yeah.
Right? That's like the exact same font.
It feels like Knives Out.
Yeah.
It really
does. It
does
look like it.
But it's fun. It's It's quick. It was a like snappy 90-minute film.
Yeah, it was like really well received too. I feel like it's nice when a horror movie is just quick and fun and you just have a good time at the movies. And that's what this is.
Just a good time at the movies. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Okay, let's get into it. I want to hear all about it.
You know that scene in horror movies where someone's alone at home, cooking or whatever, watching TV, and a killer is outside watching them through their huge, open, enormous, completely clear windows that for some reason have no blinds or coverings on them whatsoever? Don't let that be you. You need privacy. You need 3-day blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the U.S., and right now they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. And if you're not very handy, that's not a problem, because the expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install, so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. I feel like sometimes when you hear the word blinds, you might be thinking of broken, loud, dirty dorm room blinds, but I was just looking at 3-Day Blinds' Instagram, and I can assure you that is not what we are talking about here. These are good-looking blinds, shades, shutters, etc. They have thousands of options for any budget or style, no matter your unique need, whether it's motorization, to home automation, room darkening, or child safety. They're going to have something that's going to look gorgeous in your home, and it's going to keep those prying eyes away so you don't have to live in your very own horror movie. Right now, you can get 3-Day Blinds buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. One last time, that's the number 3daiblinds.com/too scary.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Okay, so we start in this big old mansion that we saw in the trailer. We see two boys kind of running. It's nighttime. They look scared. And one of the boys hides the other one in a closet and says, hide here, stay here. Closes him in the closet. The boys' names are Alex and Daniel. And he's like, Alex, it's okay, stay here. And he's like, Daniel, no. That's how we know their names.
That's how we know. Daniel, yep, they say it. That's how we know. They say it.
And then so Daniel is in this kind of this room by himself, and we see.
And I'll say Daniel's probably 5-ish.
Oh yeah, you're gonna have to. Oh, Emily, I think that's wrong.
Really? How old do you think he is?
Okay, well,
4.
No, I was thinking like 10. I was thinking like 8 and 10.
No fucking way.
I thought he was way older.
8 and 10.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
We're gonna have to show.
No, you're right, because
a picture of this. No, I think they're like maybe 4 and 6, but okay, I think okay. Probably more like. Yeah,
that sounds fair. We'll
4
split the
years
difference.
Old, 8 years old.
They're not 8 and 10. There's no fucking way. But they are like 4 and 6.
Okay, great. So
and Daniel is the 6-year-old, and he's like, Alex, hi, stay here, shh, don't say anything.
Mm-hmm. Daniel's the older brother, so he's out, and then in runs a man in a tuxedo with an arrow sticking out of his stomach or something, saying, help me, you got to help me, like they're trying to kill me. And Daniel then yells, he's in here, and all the rest of the family runs in with a bunch of weapons and like shoot a crossbow in his heart, I think. And then, or just actually another one in the chest. And then a bride runs in screaming and crying like, no, no, like I love him. Don't do this. Like I love him. And they're holding her back. And then they say, okay, bring him to the table. It's time for the ritual. And then it cuts and we go to 30 years later.
Oh.
And we meet our protagonist, Samara Weaving, whose name is...
Oh, I don't know that you might cut this out, but a thing that I feel like is also important is they... the Is it the mom? An older woman goes up to Daniel after when he's like, she's in here, and they get the guy and they drag him out. Mm-hmm. She goes over to him and she's like, I'm so proud of you.
We're
proud of Daniel for this choice. Yeah.
Being complicit in a murder.
Yes.
Yes.
And so 30 years later, we meet Grace on her wedding day. She's in the little bridal suite, I suppose, of this mansion, about to marry in to this incredibly rich family. She's kind of psyching herself up in the mirror, being like, to have and to hold, even though your family is so intimidating and so rich and they really scare me. But I'm like excited to be a part of your moderately fucked up family. And then her husband is, or her fiance is behind her and he's like, moderately, ha ha ha, they're very fucked up. And they have a nice little moment.
Yeah, they seem very into each other. Mm-hmm. They're like having fun banter.
Is this movie... are there a lot of jokes? Like, does it
take itself? That's the impression.
I definitely got the impression during the trailer that it's like a horror comedy situation.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then we meet Daniel, who is Adam Brody.
Oh, and she mentions when she's like talking about his fucked up family, like in the mirror, something like, and your alcoholic brother who like always hits on me and like,
that's right.
And then he comes in, we hear him named Daniel, and we're like, I mean, at least I said, like, oh, yeah, of course he's an alcoholic. He was complicit in a murder at age 6.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's how we learned that the guy she's marrying is the one who was hidden away. And yes, Adam Brody is the older brother.
So he's kind of evil in this one, too.
He goes through a journey for sure.
Let's just. Henley, let's just listen to the movie.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have jumped ahead. It's just that trailer, you know.
But so Daniel pops in and he's already kind of drunk and he's kind of roughhousing with Alex, like, oh, it's your big day, kind of giving him a hard time. And he turns to Grace and says, you know, it's not too late to back out. Like, you can still change your mind. And then Alex turns to Grace and says, he's right, though, you know, like, it's not too late. You can still change your mind. And he's kind of serious about it. And she like looks at him like, no, like, I'm all in. This is what I want. Let's do this. And then we go outside to the wedding reception area or whatever. And we're starting the ceremony. They're taking photographs and stuff. I guess it's post ceremony. So we start to meet some of the family members. There's the dad, who I'll probably just call dad. His name is Tony, but seems easier to say dad.
The dad is talking to Daniel before when they're taking portraits and being like, yeah, he could have done so much better. And Daniel says, oh, yeah, you wanted better for your favorite son. So we learn that Alex is the favorite son.
Wait, clarifying question. Is it just their family? Like, is her family around? Are there friends there?
We don't really meet any friends. We don't meet her family.
Okay, so they don't have any guests, other guests.
It's basically just his family.
That seems kind of strange, but okay.
So, yeah. And then the mom, the mom talks to Grace and is asking her, like, are you nervous? And she's weird, but is clearly trying to put her more at ease in a way. Like, she's more on board with Grace, or at least is seeming to be more on board with Grace than the dad.
Mm-hmm.
And is like, look, I know Alex is crazy about you and that's all that matters. And we're excited to have you in the family. Grace is feeling she's feeling better about the family after the conversation with the mom.
And then we meet Adam Brody's wife, Daniel's wife, who is named Charity, who right away just has a very icy attitude. She is not, I think she says right away, she'll never be one of us.
And Daniel, they're not happy. Daniel says something to her like, oh, why? Yeah, because she has a soul. Like, he's not a happy person. He doesn't really seem to like his family, but he's also just a part of it.
Right. And then we see there are three maids who are comically like, so
they look like cyborgs.
Yeah. They look robotic. That's right. They look robotic.
They look like spooky robots.
Yeah.
Spooky, sexy robots.
And finally, we see Aunt Helene, who is incredibly scary with such a scowl on her face. She has like white, kind of slicked back, poofy hair, and just like the meanest scowl on her face. She's just giving everybody a death stare, especially Grace. And then they get married, right? And then,
yeah, then we see them kiss. We see the end of the wedding. They kiss. People clap. They walk down the aisle. Yay, hooray, they got married. We go up to Alex's room. They start fooling around. They're like really happy. She starts trying to have sex. She's like, we just got married. Like, holy shit, that's awesome. And he's sort of stopping her as if there's a reason why they can't do that
right,
yet.
Right.
And then all of a sudden she sees Aunt Helene in the corner of the room, but like the opposite corner of the room from the door. Like she's all of a sudden in the room. And so she's like, holy shit, where did she come from? Like, what the fuck?
Oh, right. There's like a trap door, a hidden door or something.
And so we learn that there are servants' quarters, like servant hallways through the entire house with like a secret set of doors.
Right. Aunt Helene basically says like, it's time or something like that. Like she's just being kind of cryptic and spooky and walks out. And Grace is like, what the fuck was that? And we learn, Alex says, we have to play a game at midnight. This is a tradition my family has. Every time a new person enters the family, we have to play a board game. And it's stupid, but after this, you'll be part of the family. This is like the last thing. And then after this, they'll all accept you, basically.
Oh, and we should mention, I don't know that we did, this family is very wealthy because they are they have like a board game fortune.
Yes.
Board game dynasty.
Board game tycoons. And she's like, do I have to win? And he says, no, you just have to play. And that's it. And she's like, okay, if it gets your family to accept me, like I'm down.
What would you guys do if this happened to you?
I think that I would have a lot of problems marrying into this family in the first place. I'd be
right.
Absolutely.
I'd maybe not let it get this far.
Yeah, my biggest thing at this moment, because also like, you know what's coming because you're watching a horror movie. So you're like, oh, well, this is going to get bad. But my biggest thing is your fiance should tell you that this is going to happen before.
Yeah.
Like, by the way, right? We're a game family. So like after our wedding, they're going to make you play a game. It's just a thing we do, as opposed to like, oh, by the way, anyway, it's happening right now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Which will lead me to another point that I'm going to have as we get a little further along of another thing that I'm like, hey, he should have done this before
yep.
now. Anyway.
Yep.
We'll
he definitely does not do things correctly.
He doesn't handle it great. So they meet in the music room where they have some they're like, get drinks and have some conversations first, where she ends up talking to the mom again, who was like, your vows were so wonderful. I'm so glad Alex found you. And this is where we get a little bit of a backstory on Grace, where the mom says like, I had no idea you were raised in foster care.
Yes.
And she says, yeah, my foster parents loved me, but they're, you know, it was always temporary and I've always wanted a permanent family. That's why it was so important to me that me and Alex get married, because I really just wanted to be a permanent member of his family.
We get a little bit of a hint that Alex has been removed from this family for a while. Like doesn't want to be. So she says, thank you for bringing him back to us, because he's been distant. He doesn't want to have anything to do with us. And this marriage is kind of what's brought him back into the fold. And she says, you promise me you'll do what you can to keep him close to us, and like, we want to be family too, and so just do what you can to make him try to be part of the family again.
We also get the notion too when Grace is talking to the mom, she says like, oh, Alex would have been happy never, she said, like, living in sin forever, and joking like, Alex did not want to get married necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's clear he loves Grace very much, but he did not want to get married. It was Grace who really wanted to make it official in this way. And it is because she's never really had a permanent family.
I think his reasons for not wanting to get married seem pretty legitimate. Maybe should have shared that with her.
Yeah.
It may seem as though there are some choices he could have made differently. And we're going to learn what all of those are, because they exist.
And somewhere in here, he's talking to his dad, and his dad says, are you prepared to do what you have to do if she pulls that card?
Yeah, so they say, they go like, okay, we play the game. We pull the card in this room. This is a family-only room. And this is, yeah, the room that we saw the doors close on that room in the opening sequence when the guy who got shot with the crossbow was dragged into this room. We see it's the same room that they're brought into now, which, yeah, has, like, taxidermied heads everywhere and weapons and is very spooky.
Yeah, and we meet two new characters named Fitch and Emily, who are, I believe Emily is their sister, right? The third sibling.
Yes, and she's, like,
coked out of
her mind.
Clearly
kind of a fuck up and, like, a little bit crazy, and also very funny that she like missed the wedding. They come in and they're like, oh my god, nice to meet you, you guys got married, it's so great. And she's like has this insane energy and is like, we're gonna be best friends.
She's definitely coked out. Grace points to her nose. She has powder on her nose that she like wipes away. She's like legitimately doing a bunch of coke, and they like make jokes about how like, oh, it took them longer because they had to take their private jet, like they just can't fly commercial anymore, it's like so disgusting flying commercial, and they just come in with real crazy energy.
And I don't know if this is when, but their kids arrive with them and are like running circles around the room being really crazy. And one, we didn't mention this I don't think in the opening sequence, but all of the people, all of the family members aside from the kids in Alex and Daniel in that opening sequence with the crossbow are wearing these like very weird,
creepy masks. Mm-hmm.
And when Emily's kids come in, one of them, the older one, is wearing one of those masks, like just playing with it. And then I think they say like, okay, time, you guys have to go to bed. And they like go up to go to bed. Mm-hmm. But we see that they have two children.
Do wealthy people actually love to wear masks as much as Hollywood likes to depict wealthy people wearing masks?
Masquerade,
in a creepy way?
Balls.
I mean, if so, they're having the time of their lives right now. I did see a tweet of someone being like Tom Cruise could just be walking among us right now and we wouldn't even know. And so I'm like, maybe they do because anonymity. I don't know. And it's, you know, freaky and kinky and rich people are weird.
Freaky and kinky. What's the sex cult? Sanctuary?
Yeah, right? Is that it?
I think that's what it's called.
So.
Oh, no, excuse me. It's Sanctum.
Sanctum.
But okay, so now we're kind of all gathered around this big table, and Tony, the patriarch of the family, and he's kind of explaining the ritual and the history of the families, like where our ancestor Victor Domus made a deal with a man named Monsieur Labelle, in exchange for observing this tradition, we would get a great fortune. And this is something that their ancestor did in order to make this successful board game, whatever industry.
Yeah. Essentially, their whole success boils down to a deal their great, great uncle, great grandfather made with this man named Labelle.
Okay.
Yeah. So what they have to do is there's this little like metal box that they put
a blank card in. And when it comes out,
it prints something on it.
It will say, well, it's magic, I think.
Got it. I missed that.
Okay.
And so, yeah, this is what they do when other people come into the family, whenever anyone gets married. And so Emily's husband, Fitch, says, you know, I played chess. And Charity says, I played old maid. Like, this is what we do.
And LaBelle decides what card comes out. Or that's just how it works.
Right. And so they give it to Grace to pull a card. And she pulls it. And looks at it and giggles. And she says, oh, it says hide and seek. And Alex looks so stressed. Like, immediately.
Oh, no. Honestly, everyone at the table stiff. Like, he looks the worst. But clearly all of them are like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, no one's amped. No one's, like, bloodthirsty and excited about it. Right now.
No, but they are
not in this moment
committed to it,
resigned to it. Yeah.
And so she's kind of laughing. Obviously, she has no idea what that means. And so she's like, oh, who hides, who seeks? They're like, well, you'll be doing the hiding. And
oh, God.
She's like, well, there's no way I can win, right? And he, Tony is like, well, you could stay hidden until dawn. And she like laughs like, huh, no thanks. And
don't want to do that. And so they're staying, all of them are staying in this game room. She's the only one who's leaving. And as she's leaving, Alex whispers in her ear and is like, go to my room. Like, when you leave this room, mm-hmm. go to my room. And she's like, no, I have to hide and you'll find me. And he's really trying to impress her. Like, go to my room. But it's sort of, he's not really able to convey that to her, which is another one where I was like, hey, first of all, you tell your fiance there's going to be a game. Second of all, you say, don't think about this too much. I'll explain it later. If the card says hide and seek, hide in my room. That's it. That's all I have to say. Hide it. Go to my room if the card says hide and seek. He doesn't do that. And shame on him.
Yeah, he's not a forward. He's not a forward thinker. He's not a long term.
No,
planner.
He really isn't getting ahead of this. For someone who knows exactly how this goes, he did not get ahead
for
of
someone
it.
Who has had his entire life to think about this moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He didn't make a lot of plans for it.
He also he didn't. There was a chance this wouldn't happen. Seemingly a pretty good one.
He was banking on that for
even
sure.
Even still, dude, fucking plan for it.
Yeah, plan for it. Plan for it. Wow.
Plan for it. Yeah.
So they tell her that they will be turned. She says, oh, this is not really fair because you have obviously cameras everywhere, security cameras. And they say, no, we'll turn those off. We respect tradition. It has to be just like it was, you know, however many hundred years ago that this tradition started. So they turn the cameras off and they turn on a record. Mark your bingos.
Another and record player.
Spooky record.
That's one, that is one that I would not expect to show up as often as it does in these movies.
There's always a record player. And it plays a little hide and seek themed song.
It says, it's the record literally says the hide and seek song. And it's like, deep, 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 deep. Ready to go? We're gonna play the hide and seek. So it's like creepy and weird and like, yeah.
And so she runs upstairs and
she's still wearing her full wedding dress and heels. By the way,
we're cutting back and forth between her looking for a hiding spot and the family like gearing up with weapons, taking shotguns, crossbows, axes off the wall.
Each one of them is given one weapon and they're all like very old school. A shotgun, a huge like fucking machete thing.
Yeah.
A crossbow, an old timey little gun.
They're making jokes like Fitch is like, am I supposed to fucking know how to use this? Like they don't do this. They've never done this before.
A bow and arrow. Right. They're not well practiced with this.
Right.
And the mom says to Alex, who's like, he's like sitting on a couch in that room, just like completely shaken. She says to him, like, maybe you should just stay here until the game is over.
Yeah.
They shut the doors on him.
Yeah.
And the mom asks Charity to stand outside the doors and make sure he stays in the room.
And Grace eventually hides in the dumbwaiter, the little like service elevator thing where you put meals in to move them from floor to floor. We see Alex in the game room, stressed, kind of pacing. And there's a trap door that goes to service tunnels.
Yeah. So these trap doors that were meant revealed to us earlier, when Helene all of a sudden showed up in his bedroom, he notices that there is a servant's door in that room that he could sneak through and not be seen leaving.
Yeah. So he does that. Eventually, Charity comes in to try to, she says, oh, Alex, do you need some company? Like, this must be really hard for you. We're all trying to kill your wife.
We're all about to kill your wife.
And he is gone. So she's like, oh, fuck. And then we go back to Grace in the dumbwaiter. She gets out. She just, I guess, gets bored. She's like,
yeah, she's like, she even says out loud, she's like, yeah, all right, enough of this. I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah. So she starts kind of tiptoeing around the hallways and making her way towards Alex's room. And as she's doing that, we hear one of the maids kind of yelling, Georgie.
Oh, yes. We saw one of the three spooky robot sexy maids. It was had been reading bedtime stories to Emily's two kids. She fell asleep. She wakes up and Georgie, the older one, who was wearing the mask before, is out of bed. So she gets up and starts walking through the house being like, Georgie, where'd you go?
Mm-hmm. Grace sees her and is kind of hiding from her too. I don't know, just in case, kind of ducks
like
into,
all in good fun. Like, ooh, it's hide and seek. I'm going to keep hiding.
Goes into Alex's room, kind of ducks behind his bed.
She goes into the, she backs into like the doorway. She's sort of like hiding behind the wall, peeking.
Mm-hmm.
And a hand comes from behind her mouth,
that's
over
right.
her mouth, and pulls her into the room. And it's Alex. And she's like, what the fuck? You scared the shit out of me. And he's like, shut up. Come behind my bed. And he pulls her behind the bed. And so they're hiding back there.
And then the maid comes into that room looking for Georgie, still kind of walking around in the room. And then we just see her get shot in the head and collapse onto the ground. And Emily walks in kind of screaming and freaking out like, I got her. And then immediately Daniel is like, does she look like she's wearing a wedding dress? Like, that's not her. And then the dad's like, Emily, why would you shoot her in the head? She needs to be alive for the ritual. You need to aim for the body. Like, you're, what are you doing? And Emily is like super coked out, being like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And she like kneels down. She's like, are you okay? And she's like been shot like through the eye and is
like pooling blood out of her mouth. And it's just like, it's nasty. Yeah. But, and they're all like, this is an interesting moment, I think, because it's clear they're not just like murderers who will kill whoever. Like, they're all really upset that this other woman is getting killed, and because they're like, what the fuck, like, what are we supposed to do with this person? And like, and I think Emily is the one who says like, what, well, does it count, like, can it still count if we use her? And they're like, no, it has to be the bride. Meanwhile, Grace and Alex are behind the bed hiding, hearing all of this, and Grace saw her get shot and is like freaking out and like crying and has her own hand over her mouth and is hearing them be like, it has to be the bride.
Wow, this is a horrible wedding night. This is awful news.
Horrible wedding night. Horrible.
Yeah, and they don't obviously they're not, you know, skilled murderers, but they're definitely not too worried about like the, you know, sanctity of human life. There's definitely inconvenience.
But they're after a specific goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, what do we do with her? Well, the mom says, well, we better carry her out of here. Grace can't see her. So they start carrying her out. And then Alex is like, okay, we got to fucking move. Like, get up, get your shoes. We got to get out of here. And she's like, what the fuck is going on? And he says, you picked the one card. Like, this is the only card that this would have happened if you pick the hide and seek card. Unfortunately, my family thinks they have to kill you before the sun rises. And he's like, they think that if they don't kill you before sunrise, that we will all die, that our whole family will die.
He says, yeah, I'm not gonna let that happen to you. You're everything to me. I'm gonna sneak you out of here. And she's like, why the fuck didn't you like, what the fuck is this? Why didn't you tell me? And he's like, well, you're the one who wanted to get married. And she's like, this is my fault, and like freaks out at him. And he's like, no, sorry. He's like, you're the most important thing in the world to me. If I had told you this, you would have left me. Like, I wouldn't have you if you knew that my family was this fucked up.
But yeah, he's like, so I got to get you out of here. But the house is on lockdown right now. So she's got her sneakers on. And she rips her wedding dress into a little midi dress.
Cute.
Yeah, tells her, he's like, go follow this hallway all the way down. Take the door at the end. It gets you to the kitchen. Meanwhile, I'm going to go back to the house. I'm going to go to the security room and I'm going to unlock. So when you turn the cameras off, they have a system set that there's like one lever that turns the cameras off and locks all the doors. Like, it's an electronic system. So he's like, I'm going to go and I'm going to release that so that the doors unlock. You have to get to the kitchen on your own so that I can do that, so that then you can escape and I will meet you there. She's like, do not leave me. And he's like, I have to. If I don't go do this, you won't be able to get out. So he goes to do that. And meanwhile, she continues down. She rips off her little dress. She's wearing yellow Converse. She looks really cool. And she continues on to try to go to the kitchen to get out.
She gets to the end of the hallway and there are two doors. So she's kind of looking back and forth like, fuck, he didn't say which door. And opens one and the whole family is there. It's like the dad and the sister and Daniel.
They're carrying the dead maid like down the hallway.
And they're found her. And then Emily is on the other end of the hall and it's like, ah, don't fuck it up this time, and shoots Grace ducks. And so she's kind of like shooting at her family and it's like this whole commotion. They're like, Emily, what the fuck are you doing? And so in that, Grace is able to duck out and like run down a staircase into a different part of the house and kind of lose them. And then the family is in the room together kind of trying to get their weapons back in order because she's like, well, I'm so bad at the gun or whatever. Emily is not doing well with her current weapon. So she's like, Fitch is like, well, you can try my crossbow. And then as she's holding the crossbow, maid number two runs in and is like, I think I see her over there or something. I can't remember what she says, but then Emily turns to face her and accidentally fires off the crossbow and shoots maid number two in the head. So she is.
So now we've killed two maids.
Killing those
also,
maids.
Both of these things were in the trailer. You guys were right. That was too much. Both scenes right in a row.
Too much in that trailer.
So somewhere in here, she runs into, I guess, I don't know, the music room. We'll just say, who knows what all these rooms are.
Who knows? A room.
Another
a big room.
Another room in the house. And Daniel is in there. And
yeah, he tells her, he's like, they see each other. She sort of freezes and he goes, just came in here to get another drink, and just like goes, fills up his glass. And she's like, Daniel, you have to help me get out of here. Like, you're a good person. Alex loves you. You don't want to do this. And what does he say?
I don't know. He's kind of just like, I'll give you a head start.
Yeah, he's like, I'm sorry.
I have to do this.
He's like, I'm not a good person. That's Alex. I'm not like who you think I am.
Yeah.
I'll give you a 10-second head start.
So run.
Yeah. So she runs and we see him counting and he goes like one thousand. Two and a quarter. What? Like we can tell he doesn't. He doesn't really give a fuck either way. But eventually, he does scream, "She's in the study," and she has already run away by then.
And then we go to Grace, who is kind of. She runs into the game room and pulls a shotgun off the wall. She needs a weapon, so she pulls a shotgun off the wall and like this big crazy ammunition like bullet strap thing. It's clear she doesn't know how to really use it.
I mean, why would you?
Why would you? Sure. And she goes into the kitchen.
So she goes into the kitchen, tries the door, sees that it's still locked. So Alex has not yet made it to the security room to unlock the doors. She hears the butler start whistling from the hallway entering the kitchen. So she ducks down behind the kitchen island to sort of hide herself. And the butler comes in and starts washing dishes while whistling very loudly that, he really loves that song.
He does love that song. And so she's kind of crouched hiding from him and she's trying to load the shotgun, but when she opens the gun it makes a click and everything she does makes a little noise, so he keeps kind of being like, what is that? And kind of moving to explore. So it's the, you know, classic thing of you moving around a corner and him looking around the corner and he just, you know, he doesn't see her. Eventually, when she closes the barrel of the shotgun, he hears it. Meanwhile, Alex is watching through the security cameras.
Yeah, Alex has made it to the security room. He turns on the camera so he can see where she is.
Mm-hmm. So he's like watching this being like, oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. And eventually the butler hears her. She pops up. She tries to shoot him. It doesn't work. And he like laughs at her and he's like, the ammunition's just for show. Like, that's not going to work. And which is like crazy because they all also grabbed weapons off the wall. Like, why wouldn't it work? That's like where all their
she grabbed the wrong one. I don't know. I guess she grabbed the wrong one.
But so she grabs a kettle filled with hot water that he was just making himself tea with. Dumps hot water, like boiling hot water on his face.
So she like fights him and manages to get away. But he's sort of blocking the door, I think. Like even when he gets burned, he's still like in front of that exit door. So she sort of runs away.
While that's happening, the dad goes into the security camera room. And
when we get there, we see that Alex has unlocked the doors. And then he bashes apart the security system with a fire extinguisher. Breaking all the monitors and making them unable to lock the doors again.
Well, he's finally done something useful, so that's good.
He has. However, they come in to the security room.
I think the dad comes in. Him and his dad get in a huge fight, and he's like, "That's my wife," and he strangles his dad and like almost kills him. He's like, the look in his eyes is like, "I will kill my dad."
Yeah, and he's like, yeah.
And then I think at the last second, he kind of drops him.
Daniel comes in and is like, hey, like sort of standing over his shoulder being like, we get the impression in the movie thus far that like Daniel and Alex are very close. Alex really looks up to Daniel. Daniel looks out for Alex. They love each other very much. And so Daniel comes over to him and he's like, hey, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do this. Knowing that he's like about to kill his dad. So Alex backs off.
And Alex is like, you got to help me. Please help me. Like, I love her. Please help me. Meanwhile, the dad is like sputtering on the ground. And then the dad comes up from behind and knocks Alex on the head and says to Daniel, whose side are you on? And he says, well, I distracted him, didn't I? And then they like carry Alex's unconscious body away. And then Grace is still in the house because then she's running down a hallway and she sees maid number three in a dumbwaiter, kind of hidden. Why is she hiding? I guess she's just scared because the other two maids
she knows the two other maids have died. Yeah, so she's like in the trying to hide in the dumbwaiter and like calls out to Grace and is like, what's going on? I don't understand what's happening. Like two of the maids died. Like, what the fuck? And Grace is like, they're after me. They're not after you. Switch places with me. Let me hide in there. You get out. You're like, you'll be fine.
Oh,
and the
God.
Maid is panicked. And so she goes, she's over here, and screams to try to get the family's attention. Grace is like, no, fuck, like, no. And in her, so then the maid attempts to get back in the dumbwaiter to like hide again. And accidentally, as she's doing that, hits the switch to turn the doors on to the dumbwaiter. And Sammy, you should explain this because I looked away.
Oh, she just gets crushed. Just a simple crush. She just gets
smushed. Just a simple crush. They can't stop the doors and her like torso gets crushed in the dumbwaiter and she
dies.
So all the maids are dead.
I'm trying to picture what this looks like. Like, how could she not get out in time?
I was like, just move into it. If anything, I would maybe not try to get out. I would maybe try to pull myself back in.
She's just like really panicking and it's like sort of can't decide whether to move in or out. And then it's too late and they're closing and she just gets crushed.
But OK, so the family regroups again. Kind of like they see maid number three is dead. They're like, what the fuck? She's taking us all out. Why can't we fucking find her and get her?
Oh, they have Alex handcuffed.
Oh, duh.
To his bed.
And Aunt Helene says he's probably lost his way. He's been away from the family. And we find out that she is the bride from the opening scene. And she says he's like me. Who I was in denial of my fate at the time when this happened to me, when really I should have been the one to kill my husband myself.
He's the one who's meant to lead this family. I like
Alex is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex is. They're like the mom and dad are like, what do you mean? He's like, he's left us. He's been away. And she says, well, why is he the only one who's ever seen LaBelle in his chair? earlier in the movie, like, there is a chair that remains empty and the dad says something like, "Here's looking at you, Mr. LaMail," or something like that. So, yeah, she's like, why is he the only one who's seen Mr. LaBelle in his chair? And they're like, he was five. He could have been lying or just making it up or dreaming. Like, who knows? Meanwhile, we see Grace has made it outside and is standing sort of like on the ledge outside of Alex's window, hearing all of this being said. They all leave his room to go try to find her again. And we see that Alex was faking being unconscious. He also heard everything that was just said. Wow. But yeah, so then go back to Grace. She jumps from the second story.
Makes it down, kind of running down through the grounds. Makes it to this barn that is...
Man, this was a time where I was like, oh man. Because you realize like, okay, cool. She made it out of the house. But this property is fucking huge. Like, she still has so far to go before she makes it off this property. Which I was really bummed about.
This is why we all need to be running in our free time, you know, just in case anything like this ever happens to you. It's good to know you can just run.
We should all be doing endurance training.
Just in case.
But she makes it into this goat barn.
You know how everyone has a goat barn
filled with goats.
Normal thing.
And
ugh, goats, so cute. I love goats.
While she's in there, Georgie comes in.
She sees that it's Georgie, the oldest son, and stands up and is like, "Oh, thank God. Oh my God, Georgie, thank God it's you. Look, you have to help me. They're trying to kill me." Like, being like, "Oh, he's a child. This is great. This is fine."
Mirroring that.
Not unlike
earlier scene.
The opening sequence.
Exactly. And she's like, got her hands up, like, please help me. And he pulls out a gun and he shoots her right through the palm of her hand. And it takes a big circle chunk out of her hand. You could see through her hand.
You see right through it.
And she screams and then with her other hand punches him in the head and like knocks him out.
Punches him right in the face and knocks him out.
It's pretty great.
It's really funny. And I will say, Georgie probably is about 11 or 12.
Yeah, maybe Georgie's maybe I'm mixing up those kids.
Yeah, Georgie's like older.
And then she falls into, there's like a little trap door. What do you call, like a cellar door almost? And
yeah,
falls through that, and there's a bunch of dead goat carcasses down there. So she falls with her freshly shot open wound.
I said out loud to Joel as I was watching, oh, Henley would hate this part, because it is filthy. It's nasty, and she's freshly wounded.
Yeah, she's got a big...
And she falls into this nasty carcass pit, and there are flies everywhere, and she immediately vomits. It is nasty.
I'd say this is this is the toughest part of the movie for sure.
This is the toughest part. She looks, so it's, we see it's a bunch of goat carcasses. Some of them look more recent than others. But she looks to her other side and we see a skeleton with two crossbow arrows through it, who is the husband from the beginning. So we got human and non-human corpses in this pit.
But okay, so she goes to try to climb back out. There's like a ladder, but she obviously has a huge hole in her hand. And so she's kind of trying to like one-handed balance on this ladder.
It's also like an old, rickety, unstable ladder. And she's got a decent way to climb to get out.
Yeah. And so she slowly but surely makes it to the top with her good hand kind of holding her bad hand to her body. And then as she gets her hand on the top, the whole like ladder collapses. So she's just dangling with one from one hand. And so she,
it's also like dirty and slippery and,
And so we know she's going to need to use that second hand. She can't pull herself out one handed.
No.
And
no.
We unfortunately
see... This is a part where I did not Watch it.
Well, we
didn't watch this
unfortunately
part.
See a big nail on the...
I had seen that and was like, nope, nope, nope.
Where you would assume her second hand would go. And
she has not seen the nail.
She does not know
just
it's
us.
There.
Just us.
She uses all of her force to swing that second hand up
no.
and just slams it right onto that nail, screaming in pain. But with no choice but to pull herself up, she pulls herself up with her fucking wounded hand with a nail through it and gets out. And doesn't she like say fuck you to the kid? She's like, fuck you, Georgie, like to his like
yeah,
unconscious
she's like,
little
you little motherfucker. She's like really, really pissed. And I am too. Her acting is so good in this moment. I like really...
She's very good.
She's very good. And this moment in particular, just like watching her just be like, just like, oh, the pain. And she rips the sleeve off her wedding dress to like make a little tourniquet around her very wounded hand.
Mm-hmm. So she then gets out of that barn, starts running, trying to find her way out of this property, makes it to a gate and finds a loose bar
rod,
I guess.
Yeah.
And is trying to like pry because it's not the gate isn't wide enough for her to fit through, but there's one loose rod. And so she has to kind of pry
vertical slats.
Yeah. So she pries this one off, breaks it off, making a bigger opening, but it has now like a jagged piece of metal sticking out of it.
No.
And she's
this is a really rough 10 minutes of this movie. Hated it. And like this is once again a moment where I was like, no, I will not be looking at this part. But you can hear it and you know it's happening and it's bad.
So she sees a car coming and she's like, fuck, I gotta get out here and signal this car. This is my chance. Because they're kind of in the middle of nowhere. There's no neighbors around.
Yeah, that's another thing I realized at this moment is not only is this an insanely huge property, but then it's the only property for a good stretch because that's how it is when you're fucking rich.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so she starts squeezing out through this gap, but this one jagged piece of the like wrought iron gate is slicing her back open. And she just has, I guess... no choice. She has to get out. And so she pushes herself through and it's going like inches into her. It's like digging into her back and cuts.
It's so
also
awful.
Emily, you hate knives. Like you hate
I
like
hated
yeah.
Knowing that this was happening. Hated it. Hated it so much.
It's bad. It's bad. But she makes it out. And runs in time for this car that's driving by and kind of runs in front of it. She's like, help me, help me, help me. You got to help me. And the guy slows down for a second and then speeds back up. Is like, get out of the way. And speeds off. And she watches him go and then says, fucking rich people.
Oh, my God.
And so just on foot kind of runs into the woods. Meanwhile, they know that she has gotten out. They've kind of seen, I guess, where she's going, and they send the butler. The butler has survived his hot water scalding.
His face is fucked up, but he's like, okay.
Yeah. And so they send him after her. So he
even like he's very dutiful, too. He like comes in and he's the one who lets them know. He's like, I was unable to repair the security footage. The doors remain unlocked. She's out. But like, I will get her. He is committed to being like, I will get her. Don't worry. Like he's on board with this mission.
Yeah. And so he's out in his car driving after her and he eventually sees her and tries to like drive her off the road. And she like dives. I don't know. He gets her. He swerves off and gets out of his car, runs after her on foot, chases her, pins her to the ground. And then she kind of gets the better of him eventually. And with her...
He's like an older guy.
Yeah.
Not old, but like they could be evenly matched if you were fighting for your life and he was not. Mm-hmm. Like you'd probably find a way to try to get at him.
And she uses her ripped dress, bloodied dress sleeve to strangle him. and strangles him until he loses consciousness. So we have a win, and she gets in the car.
However, this is a moment where he tries to shoot a gun at her, and she knocks it out of his hand, and then they're like hand-to-hand fighting, and she knocks him out. And she does not get the gun off the floor, which I was like, God, damn it, you better get that gun. But also, she's just trying to escape.
Right.
She does get in the car, and I was like, oh, cool, run him over. She also doesn't do that. Mm. She gets in the car and speeds off, which, you know, you would do. But yes. Boy, do I wish she'd gotten that gun and or driven over that man.
Yes, definitely. One of my complaints overall, actually, is that she doesn't kill enough people. I was like,
I agree. She
better start fucking killing people sometime. I was like, bloodthirsty.
I mean, it makes sense. I think that in this moment, her main goal is just like
escape.
I have to get away. Yeah. Like, they're trying to kill me. I have to get away.
I think I'm conditioned in horror movies to like have it be
same.
Like, you want some revenge, I guess.
I know. I was like, truly, I couldn't believe she didn't drive over him. But then I did take a second to think, wow, that would be a deeply upsetting thing to do, is drive a car over a human, sort of like no matter what.
Yeah, it's probably more realistic to not.
To not do that. Yeah, that would be deeply traumatic.
Yeah.
So I get it.
But I wanted it also. Yeah. But okay, so she doesn't. She gets in the car. She's driving away. And she uses the little like GPS, whatever, like security system in the car to call the like.
It's like a mapping over like OnStar, like the little button she presses. Yeah.
And he's like, how can I help you? And she's like, you have to call the police. I'm hurt. I'm in trouble. Like, please help me. People are trying to kill me. And he's like, OK, let me take a look. Let me see if I can help you with that. And then he says, oh, it seems that this car has been reported stolen. So I'm not sure that I can help you. And she's like, no, like, call the police, like, send someone here. And he's like, no, I think I'm so sorry. I have to shut down the car's engine.
What? Is that an actual real thing? Can they like shut down a car remotely?
Yeah, I think they can.
I think they can. In like that
fancy,
I think is real.
Fancy fucking cars. Yeah, they can. That are like automatic, like self-driving cars, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But so the car slows down and stops. She's like, fuck. And pretty quickly, that butler pops up in that driver's side window.
Like we knew he would.
Smashes it, grabs her, knocks her unconscious.
No, shoots her with the gun that he left behind, that she did not take from him. But it is a dart gun. He shoots her in the shoulder. She passes
out. Right.
She's like tied up in the backseat of the car.
So then the butler calls the main house to say, I got her. We're coming back.
He like FaceTimes them essentially, like on video chat up on his dashboard.
And they're all gathered around being like, hooray, thank God we got her. And then he puts on his favorite song. And he blasts
and turns the volume up way up because he's feeling great about his big victory.
While he's blasting his music, we see Grace waking up in the back seat and kind of coming to, and they also on the other end of the video chat see her sitting up in the back seat, and they're starting to try to yell at him. She's awake, but he's blasting his music so loud that he can't hear them. And she uses her feet and like kicks, because she's tied up, and kicks him in the head from the back seat. Causing
like
an
multiple times, kicks him again. He
loses control of the car and the car flips and tumbles. We get one of those cool shots from inside the car when it's flipping and going all crazy, glass flying everywhere, them kind of looking like there's no gravity for a second. I always like those shots.
Yeah, those are fun.
And then the car crashes.
It seems like maybe he's died.
I think he has died. But so Grace gets out of the car, and who is there but Daniel, just taking a little walk in the woods. And he says to her, man, I came out here to get away from all this craziness. Like, why are you disturbing my tranquility? And he's got a gun in his hand, or a shotgun, I think. And he's kind of raising it. And she again is like, Daniel, you don't want to do this. You don't want to kill me. You don't want me to die. And he says,
sorry, I want to go back because there is a moment that happens before this scene that I feel like is important. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Somewhere in the midst of all of this, Daniel and Emily, his sister, take the bodies of the maids and dump them into the goat pit, the corpse pit that we saw earlier. And meanwhile, they're talking and Daniel's like, what the fuck? Like, this is not normal. What the fuck is this? Like, this is insane that we have to do this shit. And he's like, you know, maybe we deserve to die. Like, why are we even following through with this? We're clearly fucked up. And Emily says, well, my kids don't. And that sort of takes him back, you know, gives him pause for a second, being like, oh, right, you have kids. Mm-hmm. At which point, Georgie, her son, comes too, who had been punched by Grace. And she's like, oh, my God, Georgie, what happened? And he comes over to her and he's like, I shot the lady. and she's like, or one of them is like, oh, my God, like, why did you do that? And he says, well, that's what everybody else was trying to do. And then Emily like holds him and says, I am so proud of you.
Oh, no.
Cut to now we're in the woods with Grace. Daniel sees her. And so in this moment, I'm thinking, oh, OK, we heard him doubting these choices. Maybe he's not going to give her up. I don't remember exactly what he says to her.
Well, he raises the gun to her and he says, I can't let my whole family die because of you. And so he raises his gun to shoot her and she's like talking to him and says, can't you see that that's like, this is insane? Like, obviously nothing is going to happen if you don't kill me. Like, it's not, this is not real. Like, I can't believe you guys all believe this. This is not real. And he takes the butt of the gun and knocks her out. And then the dad pops out. He's hiding in the woods, too. And so the father and son have a little moment of like, OK, I'm glad you like came to your senses. Let's go. We're running out of time. Let's take her back.
Yeah, because again, once again, this all has to happen before dawn. It didn't start until midnight. And a lot of time has passed.
Yeah.
Ritual time.
It's ritual time.
Yeah. So they're all putting on their cloaks, their spooky cloaks. This is like the hot fuzz part for the greater good, the greater good.
Oh, yeah.
But then we also see Alex is still handcuffed and he has a big conversation with his mom. His mom comes in to talk to him. And
meanwhile, he's been trying to like use the handcuffs to sort of saw through the bedpost that he's handcuffed to. Mm-hmm. We've seen him sort of doing that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so now his mom comes in and they start talking.
I can't totally remember what he says, but he kind of says like his resentments against the family. He's like, I just can't believe that we fucking sacrificed a goat every fucking month and that was normal. Like, so
yeah, she's like, why, you know, why did you ever leave us? Talking about how much like she misses him. She loves him. Sorry this had to happen. You knew it was a possibility. And he says, growing up in this family, what's so crazy is like, I did think this stuff was normal. Like, we would sacrifice goats and what's so crazy is I thought it was a normal thing to do. And I realized you'll think anything is normal if your family tells you to do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he says, but then I met Grace and she made me feel like I could be a good person and I didn't have to do these things. And like, so if it comes down to it, I choose Grace and I will choose her over you guys. And she says, if you really were going to choose her over us, you wouldn't have let her pull a card, but you let her pull a card. Mm-hmm. So I think you do believe in all of this.
Mm-hmm. Right. They also make mention of someone previously in the family who got married without doing this ritual and they died. And so we see that Alex probably on some level does believe this. That this is real. But OK, so we're now back in the game room and or whatever, I guess. Yeah. Little sacrifice room. Everyone's cloaked up.
Grace is tied down to the table and the table has a pentagram on top of it.
We're chanting in Latin.
Chanting, passing from one to the next, this goblet of some, I don't know, wine or something that they must drink as they do this ritual.
And then as they're kind of getting ready, they have like a knife, I think, that they're preparing. Mm-hmm. And then as they're kind of chanting in Latin, they all start vomiting.
Well, the father is at the head of the table and he like picks up the knife over her chest and they're all like, "Hail Satan, Hail Satan."
Yeah, another
and he
Hail
goes
Satan.
To do it and then freezes and they're all like, "Look at him." And then, yeah, they all just start puking what looks like blood.
Yeah,
it like looks like they're puking
vomit.
Up blood.
Ew.
And
gross.
Everyone except Daniel.
And Daniel unties Grace and starts running with her. And he's like, "Okay, we got."
Was Alex in this ritual too?
Alex is still handcuffed upstairs.
Oh, he's still handcuffed. Okay.
And so Daniel is running with Grace and she's like, "Did you just kill them?" And he says, no, "They'll shit weird for a week, but they'll be okay. Like, they'll just take a nap."
Yeah. So he poisoned the goblet, presumably with something, so that he could get Grace out. So the turn that we thought had happened in Daniel did happen. And I was very happy.
Yay.
Also, I said it before, I'll say it again. I thought Adam Brody was very good in this movie.
He's good.
Like, his character and his journey, I really bought. Like, I thought it paid off and made sense to me every step of the way.
Yeah, I agree. But they're running. Daniel and Grace are running.
Meanwhile, we do see that Alex has finally
broken through
the headboard and is free.
But then Charity pops up with a gun and confronts Daniel and Grace, and she's pointing the gun and Daniel puts himself in front of Grace, like blocking the line of fire. And so this is now husband and wife, wife holding a gun to her husband. And he's like, "No, we're leaving. We got to get out of here. This is crazy." And she says to him,
Charity says, "Oh yeah."
Yeah. She says, "You really don't care if I die." 'Cause the belief is that if Grace doesn't die, all of them will die. And so she's realizing that her husband is willing to sacrifice her to save Grace.
And himself,
yeah. But in that moment, Charity shoots her husband in the neck. Daniel drops to the ground, kind of choking on his blood. And Grace has a cool moment of while Charity is kind of fiddling with the gun to try to reload it, she goes and grabs it from her hand, like knocks it out of her hand, and then goes and pulls the trigger to shoot her, and it's like out of bullets. But I just like, there was no hesitation in her about to kill Charity, and I liked that. She wasn't conflicted. Mm-hmm. She's like, "Fuck you, I'm trying to kill you."
So then she takes the gun and uses the butt of the gun to
knock her out.
Knock Charity out and goes back over to Daniel, who's definitely dying.
Yeah.
100%.
Oh, no.
And there's no saving him. So she just kind of says, "Thank you. I'm so sorry."
Yeah. And he looks to her and like one of his last words is like, "Go."
Yeah,
like he like knows what he did and is like, get out of here.
So she runs to leave. And then as she's out, Alex comes down and finds Daniel dying, his brother dying, and kind of kneels and is crying like, "Oh my God."
He's like, "Don't leave me. I need you. Like, please, Daniel, stay with me." Like, clearly, like, very desperate. Like, this is the one member of his family he truly loves, and watches him die.
And then
that is so sad.
And then we're back with Grace, who is in another room, and like arrow flies by her head and hits the wall behind her. She turns and the mom, Andy McDowell, and her bow and arrow are like at the door. And she's like, "In my defense, it's been a while since I've shot the bow and arrow." So they have a big altercation. They're both trying to kill each other. Eventually, Grace gets, they get in like a scuffle on the ground. Grace gets on top of the mom and sees the metal card box that she drew the card from in the opening.
Mr. LaBelle's famous
box. Mm-hmm. And she uses it to beat her to death, smash her head in.
Holy shit.
It's crazy. Really, yeah, so violently. She finally gets the upper hand and grabs the box and smashes it with it and knocks her out. Like, she's knocks her out. She's won. And then rather than get up and leave and try to escape like she's done before, she just keeps
goes to
going
town.
And going and is screaming, is like, fuck you, fuck your family, fuck you. And is like, it's brutal.
And as that's happening, Alex walks in, seeing his new bride murder his mother really, really violently. She says, like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, she like looks at him and is just like clearly so shocked, like everything that's happened. She's like in shock. She's got her fucking hand. She's had a terrible night. Mm-hmm. And she looks at him and says, I'm sorry. And he says, I'm sorry, too.
Does Alex know that Charity shot Daniel?
Do you think no, he didn't see that.
No, happen. Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, either way, he's clearly dealing with the knowledge, I think, that he's the reason that then Daniel and his mom are both dead, essentially, because if he had just let them kill Grace, then they would also both be alive still.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a lot to take in this moment. And he says to her, you're never going to stay with me after this.
No,
absolutely not. And they're both devastated over that fact, too. I think, like, at least from the beginning, they did seem very much in love with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to her and, like, puts a hand on her face. Or he starts going to her and she's, like, backing up. She's very obviously scared of him, too. She's scared of everything.
He strokes her cheek and, you know, they're kind of having a little last little moment of goodbye or what's happening.
It also,
happening.
Though, is really scary. Like, I was very scared. We're all scared.
And for good reason,
moment.
Because then he grabs her head in between his hands.
And she starts saying, like, Alex, you're hurting me. Alex, stop.
And he says, she's in here. He yells out to his family. So everyone else runs in.
He puts his hand over her mouth. She's screaming underneath his hand, like, cannot believe that at the end of all this, it's him.
It's him.
And so they all run in. They're like, okay, fuck. Let's do this. The sun's about to rise.
It's almost done.
They get her back on the table. They're just holding her down. They don't have time to tie her down. So they're holding her down, and now
and they're like quickly chanting, like, "Yeah, Hail Satan!" It's like a quick version of the thing they did before.
And now Alex is at the head of the table, holding the knife, going to do the honors of stabbing her. He's holding the knife up above her, and as he's going to plow it down into her, she digs her nails into one of the people holding her, so she's able to. They loosen their grip for a second so she can move out of the way. But
she, like, he turns her shoulder.
And then so he misses and stabs her in the shoulder instead of the heart. And then she is able to jump up. Does she pull the knife out of herself so that she can?
So the knife stays in her shoulder and she, like, Jesus. And they're all freaking out. Like, what the fuck happens? So she, in the chaos, gets off the table, pulls a knife out of her shoulder and, like, holds it to all of them in the corner and is like, and they're all sort of standing like, fuck, oh no, fuck, like,
she lets
no
out
one's
a
really moving.
Really crazy scream, though. I just want to say it almost sounds like a goat. Like, it's a very animalistic scream. Like, I thought it was a really interesting choice. It's like not a human scream. It's like a very good desperation scream of, like, I'm willing to fucking do what I have to do to survive right now.
And she looks wild and also, like, scary. Like, there's reason for them to now be, because
yeah,
they've now tried. She's seen them try to sacrifice her twice. And now they know that, yeah, she'll do anything to them if she
and
has
to. And she's lost all hope of anyone being on her side.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
She's completely
alone.
Oh,
and they also saw, they didn't see the murder happen, but they came in and saw
the mother,
the mom
that she has murdered.
Is dead, and they are all really upset about that. I'm just going to point this out because I had to see it and it was really nasty and I hated it. They need the box for the ritual. She used the box to beat the mom to death. And they pick the box up off the floor and it has, like, her hair attached
ew.
To it.
Ew,
it's so gross.
It is really gross.
I really hated it. But then I told you guys about it, so sorry.
But okay, so she is up and waving the knife at them, and they see out the window the sun is up. It is full morning. They all freeze and they turn, open the curtains, and they're like, oh my God, oh my God. They all are freaking out.
They do a fun thing where when they open, they like open the curtains to see that it's daylight, and every single one of them goes like, and like hides as if at the mere beam of sun. Yes. That like as soon as sun hits them, they will be dead.
And then nothing happens. And what's his name? Emily's husband, Fitch, is like, I fucking knew it. It's all bullshit. Like, this is all so stupid. I can't believe it. They're all having this moment of like, oh my God, I can't believe this isn't real. And they're all like looking at her like, well, what do we do now? Like, what do we do with her? And Aunt Helene is, she's like the most diehard, like and she's looking at the empty chair like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry we let you down.
And she has the huge machete, by the way. That's been her weapon of choice for the whole evening.
Yeah. And so she's like, I'm so sorry I let you down, but like, I'm still going to follow through. Like, she still has to die. And she goes and grabs that big machete and hoists it and is about to bring it down on Grace. And then she explodes.
Just like from the center, and guts go everywhere, and she just like pop is gone.
And then
what?
And then Fitch explodes, and then Charity explodes, and one by one we're all exploding.
And what, the Emily and her two kids start running out of the room, and they're like, oh no, no. And like we see as they run out the hallway, like 1, 2, 3 just like body explosions come through.
And Grace just starts laughing, and she's like covered in blood, like the sprays of blood are like going all over her from each person's body exploding, and she's just like laughing in this shower of blood. And then the dad is like, no, I did everything right. Like, I won't let this happen. I'm in control. And he explodes.
I love it. I love it. I love to see it.
And so we're left with just Alex and Grace. And Alex looks so scared. And he's like begging Grace. He's like, Grace, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And he's like, I'm not dying because I have a second chance because of you. And I get a do-over because of you.
He's just like, oh, I love you. I'm so sorry. I love you. Let's start over. Like,
yeah, just like
forgive me.
She's like, don't fucking touch me.
Yeah, she like backs away, and then she takes off her ring and she goes, I want a divorce. And as she throws it at him, he explodes.
Oh, hell yeah! Hell
and she yeah. gets. And she's the closest to him when in this explosion, and gets his guts and blood all
goes in her mouth.
But she's thrilled about it.
She like licks her lips that are covered in his blood.
Ew. It's gross. Meanwhile, the house has started to burn down. Mm-hmm. In one of the earlier like fights that was happening, she knocks over one of the 5 candelabras. And the whole place has started to go up in flames.
Yeah. So she then, in her Converse and blood-soaked midi wedding gown, makes her way to the front of the mansion. And it's morning. And she goes and sits on the steps, lights up a cigarette. And we hear sirens coming. Eventually, the police get there. And they come up and they say, what the hell happened? And she says, in-laws. And credits.
oh my God.
End of the movie.
What a romp.
It was a romp. It definitely was a romp. And here's what I'll say. Now that we're finished, it's a very good movie. It really is fun. I like that it is real. I like that they explode. Mm-hmm. That part fucking rules. Mm-hmm. So when I say I didn't like the payoff as much, I did really like those choices. I feel like I really wanted a different final line. I think after like with how cool she was and how much she was able to rise above it and like all that fucking shit that happened to her and then sitting there smoking a cigarette, it felt like such a punchline to me,
right,
to have the last line be in-laws. I was like, that made it feel like
it cheapened it.
Movie line. And so I think I would have a different feeling of this movie if that had not been the final line, because that was the last taste left in my mouth, right, after this like badass sequence. And then it was like, in-laws.
Right.
And that just like,
yeah, it didn't need
irked
it.
Me.
It didn't need any line there. She could have just been.
It didn't need any
line. She could have just been smoking and kind of had a cool expression on her face, and the camera could have pulled out, and that could have been it. Yeah,
that's all. That's all. Not that line.
I agree.
For her, I don't.
But
think.
God, I fucking love that they all exploded.
It really is great.
I love that too. That's a fun payoff.
I really like that Alex is the one who ends up turning on her and turning her in. But I also don't feel like they gave enough weight to that turn.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a device for the plot, mm-hmm, and it didn't feel as motivated by the journey of the character the way that like Daniel's turn felt motivated by the journey of the character. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's maybe that got cut in the, because again, it was a really short movie, and that, I think it was the right length for this movie. But that was another moment where I was like, that is the correct choice. I don't think we arrived there in a way that was as satisfying as I would have liked it to be.
Right.
But again, I think I set the bar really high for this movie for whatever reason. Maybe because it is like a badass sort of feminist, like she ends up on top and murdering people and being like fucking cool.
Right.
That I wanted a little bit more from it.
I think that's fair.
Sammy, what was the dance like? What did it look
like? Oh, I just did some air punches, just kind of like a boom, boom, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is that feeling for sure. Especially once they all start exploding, you're like, hell yes, hell yes. And you know that he's going to explode. Of course he's going to explode.
Yeah, it's just fun.
Oh, we forgot to mention too, after they all explode, she looks over to LaBelle's chair and like a ghost appears in the chair and then goes away. And she's like, oh, fuck. That was another moment where I was sort of like, yeah, we already know it's real. Yeah. That, again, was like a little too
didn't need it.
Don't you see? It's like, yeah, they all exploded. We get it.
Yeah, we
get it.
Yeah. Didn't need that.
That was a very like Haunted Mansion ride type.
It does.
Ghost
it does feel
image,
like Haunted
like,
Mansion
okay.
in the end.
What a crazy film. I love it. I want to see this actress in more things.
Yeah, she's good.
She's great, I thought.
I think she will be in more things, Henley. I think you'll get your wish there.
She definitely is very compelling to watch.
I don't have too many thoughts about it, except that it was super fun to listen to. That was a fun one.
I would say this movie is a horror movie, but not a scary movie, right? Is that
I'd say there's more gore than scares. Yeah, more violence.
Yeah, it doesn't sound too scary except for the horrible tension. There's definitely tension.
There's some tension, but it's usually undercut by some humor, and I was never like afraid. It was the most uncomfortable parts are gore parts, or when her hand is fucked up and when she's slicing her back. Those are the worst.
Those are definitely the worst. I will say, like, I'm realizing as we go through this, I can handle a movie like this. And honestly, probably A Cabin in the Woods, I could probably watch far sooner and far easier than still like a Conjuring or a Paranormal. And I think it's because the ambiance of the movie itself isn't scary. Like, it's not dark in that same way. Like, those, I can't be made to feel that bad for the duration of a movie. Like, I don't want any part of that still.
Yeah.
Well, there's a certain type of filmmaking horror movies that just fills you with dread, just like horrible.
Yes, I don't want to be filled with dread. And certainly not without like a big revenge payoff like happens in this one.
Yeah. And then also in this one and Cabin in the Woods, they're so incredibly high concept and like so in like such insane scenarios, like you don't have to go to bed worried that like your in-laws are gonna show up and tell you you have to play a game, and if you don't win, you'll die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, correct. I'm not going to worry about that at night.
I did dream about, I watched this yesterday and last night, I did have a dream that I was hiding in a big house from vampires, and when they found me, I had to try to shove them into the sunlight so that they would explode, which is a combo of this and What We Do in the Shadows, which I've also been watching lately. So I definitely did dream about it, but it wasn't scary. It was just a dream that had to do with this. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what did we learn, guys? I learned divorce is cool.
Wealthy people are crazy. Don't get into a dumbwaiter.
I guess we learned a lot of things. What we learned, endurance training is important.
Oh, right.
And weight training, too.
And weight training. Yeah, don't neglect that.
Don't neglect your weight training. Don't neglect your endurance training. Don't be too rich.
Don't get into a dumbwaiter.
I guess we learned a lot of things. Wow, listeners, you have a lot. You have a big week ahead of you.
Oh,
you
my
have
God.
To.
You got
to
get.
You have
spaghetti.
To go to the Eagle Rock Italian Bakery and Deli. You've got to eat long spaghetti. You've got to listen to bedtime stories and to podcasts. And you have got to get into your strength and endurance training.
Just in case you need to escape a mansion filled with crazy people trying to kill you. You never know.
I mean, will it hurt you to be prepared? No.
Mm-mm.
And no voices. So from all of us here, we love you a lot. We'll see you next week.
Love you a lot.
And goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hi guys, Sammy here. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you liked the episode, please head on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review us. That helps other people find our podcast, really helps us out, and also subscribe anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on social media. We are at TSDW Podcast on Twitter and Stardust and Instagram. And again, in our Instagram bio, there is a link for some places you can donate to, GoFundMes, bail funds, other organizations that are doing really important work right now. We hope that you're all finding ways to incorporate activism and anti-racism into your daily lives, and that you're also taking care of yourselves and your mental health. We'll talk to you next week. Love you guys.